Hey, this is Alex in partnership with CoverPrice.com, the ultimate comic book resource, highlighting a book from CoverPrice's weekly top 10 report for the week ending June 21st. These are the comics collectors chased the hardest last week, driving demand and pushing prices across the aftermarket. This week, everyone is hyped for Spider-Man Brand New Day thanks to tickets opening up for the new movie, and so the price for Amazing Spider-Man 546 from 2008, which marks the official start of the Brand New Day storyline in the comics, is back in the spotlight and has seen a 40% increase in sales over the past week, now averaging $22 for a near-mint copy. You can identify it by the cover by Steve McNiven, which has Spider-Man springing into action off the side of an NYC skyscraper. And don't tell anyone that the movie has absolutely nothing to do with the comic book storyline inside, okay? Cool. That was a highlight from CoverPrice's weekly top 10 report. Want to learn what your collection is worth right now? CoverPrice.com does all the hard work for you, tracking aftermarket sales for both raw and slabbed comics. CoverPrice.com lets you know what your comics are actually selling for. Interested in weekly new releases, FOCs, trending comic lists, and a ton of other great content? CoverPrice has you covered. Visit CoverPrice.com/comicbookclub today to get 1 month of CoverPrice for just $1. That's CoverPrice.com/comicbookclub. What is up, everybody? Welcome to The Stack. I'm Alex.
I'm Justin.
What is up? I'm Pete.
And on The Stack, we talk about a bunch of books that have come out this week. And we do every single week. Huh. Every week, I say this right at the top. And I don't know why it's not getting through to you yet, but...
He's surprised every time. It's beautiful, in a way. He's a babe in the woods, like
me. Well, let's see how many of these books are a beautiful babe in the woods. Whoa. Kicking off with one of the most beautiful babies that doesn't even know it. 100 Bullets, U.S. of Anger, number one, from DC Vertigo, written by Brian Azzarello, like art by Eduardo Risso. This is picking off the classic Vertigo series, 100 Bullets, as well as the Brother Lono, I believe, miniseries that followed this character we see on the cover here named Lono, who's a big old bruiser with nothing to lose. The world of 100 Bullets started simply enough, just to sort of jump all the way back there, where the whole idea was seemingly random people were given a suitcase with 100 bullets, an untraceable gun, and told, do whatever you want. And that was pretty much it. It was part of a bigger conspiracy going back to the birth of the United States of America. And now, just in time for the 250th birthday of America, this series is back with this mostly black and white book that follows Lono in 2026 today, dealing with the fallout of the 100 Bullets series and a lot of other things. Pete, you seem pretty psyched about this on the live show. So what'd you think?
Yeah, I was just so excited that it's back. I really love the team on 100 Bullets. That first series of graphic novels was really impressive artistically. So I was very excited for this to come back. I felt like this is a very powerful cover, a powerful start, and I love the black and white, you know. I was very moved by this. It's upsetting. It's a lot of the things, but it definitely kind of gets you going for sure.
Justin, what about you? You're outside right now in the old U.S. of A. How are you feeling?
I'm
taking the temperature, and it's wild out here. Every squirrel around me has a gun with 100 untraceable bullets, so it's I'm in severe danger right now.
You know what that is? That's nuts.
Yeah. Oh, Alex, hold on to it. It's crazy to read this book and be like, oh, the country caught up to the book more, you know? And I feel like the book is this first issue. First off, the art's amazing. Like, it's just really, it's so simple. It feels like it is, you know, it's so pared down compared to a lot of the other artwork we see and we're going to talk about in The Stack. Yet it just pops so much more because of it. And everything is a little bit more, I mean, it's black and white, and the issues here are the opposite of that. Yeah. And I think there's something to that, the alchemy between those ideas. And then the book it's fractured purposefully, I feel like. It's a little bit of like throwing us in hard and bombarding us with violence, a violence that we don't quite understand who or why it's happening. The characters don't understand why they're together in these violent acts. And that feels like maybe the point.
Yeah, I agree with you. Just on the pure basis of it being a comic, it's hard to follow when you're reading it. But like you're saying, Justin, I do think that is a reflection of the chaos that we're facing today with just too much information all at the same time being thrown at us. There's, like Pete was intimating, there's a lot of racial stuff that's going on in this comic book. There's a lot of cops versus civilian stuff going on in this comic book as well. So there's a lot of heady issues. It is the sort of thing I'm very curious to read the second issue because, like Justin was saying, it's a lot of like, we hit the ground running. You already read the first series of the miniseries, right? You know what's going on. We don't need to get you caught up. And I kind of do, personally. So now that we've been acclimated to this, I'm curious to see how the second issue feels. Knowing Brian Azarel is writing, I don't think it's going to calm down at all. But my hope is that we start to focus in now that we have the setup for the story. But we'll see.
Yeah.
Next up, Amazing Spider-Man number 32 from Marvel, written by Joe Kelly, art by Patrick Gleason. Last issue, we got a big revelation from Aunt May that she has a son, a biological son, and Peter Parker has a cousin. He's dealing with the fallout from that, and we're continuing what we saw as the fallout in the last issue, which was him fighting in an auction that is run by the Vulture, and the way you win the auction is by fighting.
We've all fought at auctions before. Apologies to Tiffany's.
Yes, this is basically like the uncut gems of comic books. I think we can all agree on that. But there's that, and then it's moving forward from there, showing how Peter Parker is dealing with this huge revelation that changed his life, what he thinks about Aunt May, what he thinks most of all about himself, because he's always been the son that Aunt May has never had, so what does it mean that she now has a son? I think, generally speaking, we've been really enjoying Amazing Spider-Man. How'd you feel about this issue in particular?
I really like this. I mean, I wouldn't call it even a criticism, but the sort of questions we had at the end of last issue were very much like, okay, we have this very bifurcated story of this emotional tale from Aunt May and Spider-Man just kicking a very superhero fight between Spider-Man and the Vulture and other villains. And this story bridges the gap in a way that really earned the split in the last issue, I felt. And to see Peter really like off the chain, quite literally here, I thought was really powerful. And the moment where, you know, he just, this is the lightest of spoilers, but he punches the Vulture an extra time. And, you know, he doesn't kill him. He doesn't threaten to kill him. But that felt like a break. And I thought the panel after that where you see him, you know, in the classic uniform, in very classic Spider-Man look with the art, just going against sort of everything that Spider-Man is, like so overwhelmed and just overclocked because of this news, I thought was just really effective to call back that way.
Well, let me ask you a question about that, not to cut you off before your opinion, Pete, but just while we're talking about that specific moment, that really struck me as well, where you get, I think you're talking about that panel where Spider-Man's just sort of like doing the muscle pose, and it's him standing there, and he's glowing, and the lights are behind him. This is never explicitly stated, but the thing that I took away from there, that if this is what Joe Kelly is going for, I thought was so smart, is that's where Spider-Man started. He was a wrestler. He was in a ring, and he did it for the glory, and he had none of the responsibility and all of the power. And he's allowing himself, what I took away from it was he's allowing himself for a moment now that he's like, well, Uncle Ben and Aunt May, they had their own kid. That's not me. To go back, to regress to that guy that he was before everything that had happened, just for a moment. And obviously, he's not going to do that long term. He's immediately weighted on it. It weighs on him immediately after that. But I don't know. Again, that's what I took away from that panel. And I thought, I think that's what they're going for. And it's just like a very under the radar textual thing, if so.
Yeah. Well, and it's such an underexplored part of the mythology of like that time where he was that way. And to bring him back to that is a way that we don't consider him a hero. That's his lowest point, and now he's there again, which I think is really interesting to you.
I would also argue that I don't think he did it for the glory. He did it for the money. It was a way to get some quick cash. He wasn't really, you know, like...
You're talking about back in the day?
Yeah, I'm talking about when he first started wrestling. He just did it for the money.
Like, he did it for the money, but he eventually liked it. He liked being in the ring. He liked people cheering for him. He liked being able to beat anybody with his spider powers.
Sure.
Bonesaw's ready, guys. Bonesaw is ready. You got 3 seconds.
Nice little Macho Man Randy Savage shout out. I love it. Cup of coffee. All right. Anyways, I just think that first off, this issue does a lot. It's really impressive. There's a lot of emotions with Aunt May, her crying and, you know, all that going on. And then Peter kind of talking to his cousin and having this promise, this real dialogue about lying to Aunt May and all that kind of stuff was really powerful. But then seeing him go too far in the ring was also heartbreaking because that's not who Peter is. He's not that guy who's, you know, excited about using his force and beating somebody up. So, yeah, that was a little rough. And then also the alien girl getting a little too cozy on the couch.
Pete, how are you? If you're a romantic, this romance is in this issue, I thought was beautiful. This is the romance I'm most excited about. If White Queen and Tony Stark aren't going to be together, this is where my heart is.
If Pete existed in the Marvel Universe, he'd be walking over to that couch and being like, excuse me, leave some space for Adam Warlock, please.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah. I just think there's a lot going on. Joe Kelly does an amazing job as a writer. The art is fantastic. This is a very crazy issue. A lot goes down in this issue.
The other thing I want to say about it, though, is he's also doing – Peter's doing that whole fight and taking himself over the edge to try to get Shocker's gloves back so that he can be buried peacefully, essentially, and the Shocker, like, villainy put to rest. So – there is a little bit of heroism in there. And I thought that was just a sweet little undernote for the whole thing that I think helps give a little bit of context, a little bit of counterpoint to what we were saying earlier about him going back to a free of responsibility Peter Parker.
Last little thing I wanted to ask you guys. Parker Cousin, good or evil? What's your temp check right now?
Gotta be evil, I think. When I read it, I'm like, this guy's gotta be evil.
Gotta be evil.
There's that one panel after he's like, don't worry, Peter, I'll never give up your identity as Spider-Man, which I know. And then you just see him with, like, his eyes above a car door. And I was like, nope, that guy's bad news.
Well, but also I'm like, what's the point? Like, if he just vanished at the end of this issue and never came back, still valuable as a character. I wonder how long Joe Kelly's going to let this pot cook on the back burner because it could sit a while. It could come back immediately.
How far are we away from Amazing Spider-Man 1000? That's in September, right? So I feel like that's
when the recipe comes due.
Yes, I think
but
so.
But who's he going to be? What's your prediction? Who is that?
I don't know. I don't have a prediction beyond that. I just think, like, he's a bad guy because I actually think it's probably a stronger choice to make him not a bad guy, but maybe make Peter feel like, whether it's justified or not, he is the son Aunt May always wanted. Like, have him be a good guy who hangs out with Aunt May. That puts more pressure on Peter Parker than him being like, I'm a villain who dresses as a some sort of goblin. Like, we've done that a million times.
You're right dramatically, Alex, but that is way less fun from a superhero storytelling point of view. No, if he's just feeling like nephew stress throughout the next Spider-Man 1000.
Nephew stress is the worst stress, though. Oh, my God. When my aunt is not, like, totally into me, I don't know what to do.
And let's be honest, everyone. Alex's aunts are totally into him. Like, obsessed. They're so into it.
Weird, man.
It's crazy. It's
Alex said it, not us. Remember that.
They don't
Alex
listen
said
to this podcast, right? Okay, good.
My mom listens, and I'm getting your aunts on board. The last thing I would say, like, if I had to predict a villain, though, this is a villain that is very random, and it just jumped in my head first. What about the Rose, who was a famously masked villain, who was Kingpin's son, I want to say, at one time?
Yeah, at one point. That was sort of the main... The Rose. Could be. I'm going to go with
some sort of goblin. I'm excited to hear Alex pronounce this next comic.
Sure. Pete, what a specific kink on your part. Were you hoping me to do purr?
Yeah, I was waiting
evil
for a little artwork there. Yeah.
I know Pete loves it. I know Alex's aunts love it. Let's get into it.
From Image Comics. Written by Mirka Andalfa, art by Laura Braga. Now, this is a book about a lot of things, but mainly it's a book that I started reading and I was like, did we read this already? And I think I should have checked this before we got on.
Should have.
I'm pretty sure there was a previous series called Per Evil that featured these characters that we read, and maybe this is a second volume or something, because like
I didn't lot understand. Of this is you very tried familiar. To say the title again, but it didn't come through.
Per
there, Evil? There it is. Yeah.
Okay. Pete, you're going to come over and puff my fluff?
What? No. Oh, weird that you would ask that.
And for anybody listening out there, puff my fluff means blowing my asshole.
What?
Just, that's Pete, what'd you think about this book? You're the cat pervert.
For humans and cats.
Well, I was scared. I was very scared when I saw the title. But then the cover was like, oh, maybe this isn't as scary. So I got excited to read it. But then once you start reading it, room full of dead bodies right off the top. So then I got scared again. But as this went on, you know, we got kind of a mom and daughter murder team. Cool. Sure. But yeah, I'm excited to see how that kind of breaks down. But then you got the boy down the hall, and man, what a temptress. So we'll see how that kind of relationship breaks down. But mom seems like a psycho, so and the daughter seems like an evil cat. So it'll be interesting to see how this all kind of unfolds. Art's fantastic.
What a title story mismatch. And that's not a criticism per se, but I was like, I thought this was going to be like a very cute slash horror story. And it was just like a real sort of action thriller situation with a hidden identity and slightly mistaken identity. I will say it was confusing at first, but I did end up liking where it landed. And I do think we've seen these cats before in another story, but I liked the way that this landed.
Yeah, I like always what Mirko Andolfo is doing, but this is one of many books in the stack that sort of felt like Fever Dream a little bit. I'd throw 100 bullets on there where I was like, what am I reading right now? There's just a little too much to hang on to the story necessarily, but there you go. Let's talk about something a little more straightforward with Absolute Martian Manhunter, number 12 from DC Comics, written by Dennis Capp, art by Javier Rodriguez. This is the final issue of this critically acclaimed series as Despero, the evil guy who lives in John Jones's brain, is attacking him and trying to maybe kill him, maybe corrupt him completely. Their son may or may not be dead the entire time. And the Green Martian, who also lives in John's brain, is fighting back as well. Obviously, the series is very beloved. It does go in some very trippy directions. It is also, I'll throw out there, interestingly, coming hot on the heels of another big Dennis Capp finale, the ultimate endgame finale that we were mixed on, is a nice way of saying it. So how do you feel? Was this more successful as an ending?
Yeah, I mean, Justin, you know, you got your pup tent out. Are you getting your s'mores machine ready? Like, are you
s'mores
Dennis
Camp? Machine?
Yeah, are you Dennis camping right
s'mores
now?
S'mores machine? I don't know. That's, I mean, I'm in the woods, so I'm technically Dennis camping. Yeah, s'mores machine is a fire. Pete's trying to make that stick, trying to make that happen. Yes, I am Dennis camping because despite the fact that this, I wish this was longer as a series, and there's so much going on in this issue particularly, I feel like this paid off a lot of the great themes of this. It was a story about struggling with depression and sort of how that it feels internally, looking through a psychedelic lens outward from that is my interpretation. And I thought that was really cool and really worked. The art is amazing. I like how they very deftly touched on the Trinity of the Absolute series.
Yeah,
I was surprised
cameos
to see that.
Yeah.
But that was cool. And I hope we get more of this series. It was so such a critical hit, such a popular series. I would like to see more of this as a new, just a new storyline.
Yeah, I got to first back up the truck and talk about how cool this cover is. This has been really impressive as an artistic achievement. you know, super tight bananas, the art, and it's worth it for the art alone. The panel work, the layouts, the use of color, this is all just really phenomenal in this comic, and it really does a great job. There's a lot that goes down this issue, but it really lands well. It's an impressive ending that gives you a little hope. I just think this is so cool. Such a cool book to read and to look at. Looked at it numerous times, and cool that they had the kind of cameos of Batman, Superman, and Wonder Woman in this. So, yeah, this is just an impressive package and worth checking out for sure.
Next up, same level of intense education going on here in gorgeous art. Marvel Swimsuit Special, Brand New Beach Day, number one from Marvel, written by Daniel Kibblesmith, Rainbow Rowell, Anthony Oliveira, Dan Scatti, and Cody Ziegler. Art by Alessandro Miracolo, Phil Noto, Pablo Collar, Dan Scatti, and David Baldion. It's the latest swimsuit special from Marvel. This one is not one continuous story with pinups, but several short stories all about different pool days that the heroes are going on and beach days with pinups interspersed between it. I've been really harping on with these new swimsuit specials, whether they are or are not horny enough. Like, there's a certain horny level that you need to be at for a swimsuit special. I don't think this one quite got there, but the first
hit the horn.
It did not hit the horn. My aunts are not going to like this one. But the first two stories I thought were fun. Daniel Kibblesmith's story is very funny, as usual. And Rainbow Rowell's story, which is the one with the X-Men having a pool day and Beast getting all wet, I thought hit the right sort of, like, cheeky fun for this sort of thing.
Yeah, the thirst trap with Beast was, you know, definitely.
Yeah, so that was good. Period.
Yeah, I you know, if you like these things, then you know you'll enjoy this. The art is fantastic. I enjoyed the Hulk's trying to be Zen. That was fun. The Beast thirst trap was fun. But the Invisible Woman joke with not Namor, but what's his name, Imperius Rex, was a little.
It was Namor.
Okay,
that's Namor.
Yeah. It was, I didn't like it. But other than that...
Why didn't you like it? Because you wanted her to be faithful to Reed.
Well,
who is your famous enemy.
No, I don't like them together. I don't, but...
Sue and Namor.
No.
You just don't want her to be with anybody. Is that it?
You want her alone so she can stay for you. No, in her invisible cage, her invisible prison.
No, I don't like the way that Reed treats her, so I don't think they deserve together. But, you know, the way that that relationship plays out makes me a little nervous in the service, is all I'm saying.
And if you want to hear more views like this from Pete, head to Truth Social. His account is at Invisible Misogynist. It's real gross.
That's not anything close to what I'm saying, you asshole.
I agree with you, Alex. I liked these stories. I do miss the sort of unifying story. It wasn't the last year's had a one story that went through.
Yeah, it was the last two were Tim Seeley and Tony Fleece doing a unifying story. That was always like, oh, no, we're in the Savage Land and all of our clothes fell off, which was funny.
Well, because also, like, to your point also, you know, Marvel comics are famously maybe one of the least horny lines of comics across the board. Mm-hmm. And this issue comes out and you're like, okay. And I feel like you need to go a little harder in between these pinups, which are just pinups.
Yeah.
So it's like...
I was trying to think about it a little bit, and these are controversial. I mean, this one name that came to mind was a controversial one that a lot of people don't like, but like a level of a Milo Manara back in the day doing like, oh, this is making me, this is uncomfortably sexy. I don't know how I feel about this. That's maybe too far along the line, but you do want things like, I thought Dan Panosian's thing where he did Thor wearing a Speedo being like, if you know, you know.
I thought that was good.
It's cheeky. It's funny. He has ripped abs and everything, and he's just wearing the swimsuit and holding the hammer down low, and you know what that means. And that's what you want out of this sort of thing, is it should be.
Hammers are heavy. Like, that's what
it means. Yeah, exactly. And it should hit that ridiculous level. Hammers are just like, it can't just be like, we're wearing a swimsuit because they're always wearing swimsuits. Like, that is all they wear all the time. So it needs to be something beyond that.
A couple other things on it. Like, I like seeing characters chilling out. And we just haven't gotten that much lately, especially in Marvel comics, and I would just like, I was happy to see the X-Men by the pool. Like, I wish, I just want more of that in the storytelling. But what did you guys think about, there's a Captain...
Just, heroes hanging around and just kind of...
And by hanging, I mean banana hammocks, which we get moment in this Captain America pinup. What did you guys think? He's doing something with his Speedo here. What's happening here?
Justin's freezing a bit, but he's probably asking about the pinup of Captain America and what was it? Captain Marvel, She-Hulk, maybe? I don't know.
It's Scarlet Witch, She-Hulk, and Wasp watching. But what do you think he's really messing with his own Speedo?
Mm-hmm. I think it got stuck in his butt, right?
Great point. I guess maybe he was frozen for a long time. I'm sure he had a bit of a wedgie the entire time. Shouts to the White Queen pinup, though. That was my favorite.
Let's move on to an issue that was the most confusing one of the week to me. The Dog Sitter, number one, from Ignition Press, written by JBS Rich, art by Megan Levins. Now, this is a new series about a dog sitter who gets in a couple of romantic entanglements, but I didn't know any of that reading this book. So it starts off with she works in a flower shop and she welcomes dogs in and dog sits. And I was like, okay, what is this flower shop a front for? She's an assassin.
I kept waiting for the other dogs shoe to drop.
The dogs know. She can talk to the dogs. There's one woman who's like, you got to feed my dog. You know why. And hands her the things. And I was like, okay, what's going back at that dog's apartment? Yeah. Let's find out. There's going to be a dead body or she's robbing her or something. I was like, nope, she's just feeding that dog.
She's just a
A veterinarian and she goes to the party. And I was like, here we go. We're going to get the real scoop up what's going on here. She goes to the party and everybody's dressed like dog and I was like, ooh, she's gonna turn into a dog or somebody turns into a dog or something like that. And then she makes out with the guy and that's it. and this is, I want to be clear, like, entirely on me and the way that I read this comic, because it's a good solid romance comic, but not knowing any of that going in, I was like completely flabbergasted. Exactly.
Well, and the comic does a lot to set that tension. And I thought that the attention was very effectively done. And I didn't mind that it was just a bit of romance that happened because I was engaged. I thought the art was great in this. Yeah, I was into it. And maybe another shoe will drop or another little doggy sock will drop next issue. But I'm happy with where this is.
I just feel like the dog sitter, maybe, and then kind of a colon, like, no, it's really just about a dog sitter. So because I just kept being like, well, what's behind? Oh, and it just never happened. And I want to enjoy it because it is enough. It's somebody living their life and the ups and downs. Great art. Cool, interesting storyline. Great, but why am I like, but what's the thing? I don't know if it's coming or I'm just crazy or what's going on.
I think it's because of the emptiness of the panels of the narration that put that tension in there. You feel the slow creeping dread of something that's going to happen. That is, I don't think it meant to be present at all in this comic book. It could have just used some sort of narration at the beginning or some sort of setup as a romance comic rather than dropping us out to this weird flower shop that's also a dog sitting operation situation.
But there was also that dude in the morning who was like, oh, I'm out of here. I don't need breakfast. And I was like, did they just sleep together? Like, who is this guy? And
what they did. But again, that leads you to think like, oh, is he an agent? Is she an agent? Do they know each other? What's happening? And none of that.
Alex, let me just throw out here that you and I are a little bit out of the game. So, like, there's still tension. For a lot of people, the tension of dating and hooking up maybe is high. It's almost like the spy thriller that you're hoping this is. I don't
understand what that would be. You and your wife, you live in the same place, you sleep in the same bed. It's very easy. There's no tension there.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Not.
Whoa. Wow. Are you all right, bro?
Good.
I'm
great.
It seems like
I'm doing great.
Are you?
I'm doing great.
You should go walk your dog.
Between his aunts and his wife, Alex is doing great. We've learned a lot today.
Batman, number 11, another person who's having some romantic entanglements. DC Comics, written by Matt Fraction, art by Jorge Mendez. This issue is picking up on a lot of different things, specifically that there is a scientist who Bruce Wayne has, he says, not dating, but they're kind of they went they on a date. They had a thing going on. And while they had a thing going on, there was two different factions. One was trying to kill her. The other was trying to kill him, specifically Classic. Bruce Wayne. And this ghost warrior woman who was trying to kill Bruce Wayne comes back in this issue and comes after him. Another great issue of this book.
Yeah. I think this is an epic run. Like, I feel like we are downplaying how great this run is. The art is fantastic. It's so clean. The splash pages are absolutely serene. The title page with Ojo sitting with a sword out and birds landing on was so good. Everything is great. The reveal at the end, this book works so hard. When we interviewed Matt Fraction a while back, we were talking to him about, like, what he wants to do with this. And he's like, this is the only thing I'm doing. And I feel like you can feel his immense focus on the page with just all the layers he's putting in here and how just clean and beautiful this whole story is. Feels different than anything else. And it is, I just think it's working so hard. And it feels like it's under the radar a little bit for some reason.
Yeah, I know. It's a Batman book. You would think it would be getting more attention and talked about. But it is. It's just this great story that's bubbling and growing, and each issue gets better and better. First off, cool cover. I loved all the action. Loved the stuff going on. Crazy last panel. I don't know, because sometimes I get worried that, like, I'm crazy, or it's just the similarity of an artist drawing people in similar.
But yes, about like, that first part.
Is, you know, because I'm wondering if Ojo, the kind of assassin, because it's a similar build to the new Pennyworth that shows up. So, like, I was like, is this her? Is that the disguise a version of her? Or is this, like, am I putting two things together that shouldn't be there? But, man, I'm loving this issue. I'm loving all the things going on. And I also love the downtime banter. You know, you guys were talking about how it's fun to see superheroes on a beach or by a pool hanging out, talking shop. But, like, the back and forth that Robin and Batman were having in this issue was great. It was really, really cool.
It was great Gatsby, in fact. I agree.
The moment where the doorbell rings and they just look at each other like, who the fuck would that be? It was just such a fun moment.
We're both here. Who's else is coming?
Who the fuck is that? Yeah.
Very fun. And I just want to say for clarity, that Batman is currently one of the best-selling books in the comic book industry, but I agree with you. I think it is going under the radar in a weird way because of Absolute Batman. Everybody talks 100%. About that. That's where everybody's focus is. And it's not that nobody is reading this. A ton of people are reading this, but it doesn't get the same level of conversation because it's just a really good Batman run versus this thing that's like transforming the entire comic book industry.
Agreed. One other thing on this, we were talking about the unhorniness, or I was, of comics. There's a panel in here where Batman is talking, where Bruce is talking about, like, my son, had a crazy connection. Here's how he came about. And in the montage of scenes is Bruce sort of on top of Talia, wearing pants, looking down at her like, what do I do next? And I was like, that panel, I was like, come on. Either don't do this or do something a little bit more something else. But he looks like he is truly out of ideas with his spandex on, hovering over
time. I don't know how to beat this.
Yeah. I'm the world's greatest detective, and here's one mystery I can't solve.
Where does this go? All right. What if Secret Wars, number one from Marvel, written by Alex Pakdal, art by Kafu. This is the latest in a line of 50th anniversary specials that Marvel is doing. The idea here is, what if the Ultimate Universe and not the regular Marvel Universe survived the end of 2015 Secret Wars? But we get that through where Miles went to the regular Marvel Universe. Here, Peter Parker ends up in the original Ultimate Universe, and we see how it spills out from there. You know, a couple of weeks back, I was mentioning how my favorite what-ifs are the ones like the Jerry Duggan one, where it's like, oh, a simple thing happened, and by the end, it's nuclear war on Earth.
Everyone was fucked.
Yeah. It's like, this kind of gets towards this. This does it in a different mode, but I thought this one was so good. Just in bringing me back to that place of like, oh my God, the original Ultimate Universe was fucked up. Like, it really was. And that's what this dives into here in a way that we've never really seen before, just because it's Peter Parker seeing it through his eyes. And it's great. Like, I thought they did a really good job here. It goes in some wild ways that I didn't see coming, and it ends at a place that I thought was really cool as well. This is a great one shot.
It ends in a real to be continued phase. Yeah. And I was like, I sort of want that to know.
One shot makes me feel a little bit weirder about it.
Well, but I like that, though, because it lets us imagine a little bit. And I think the best what-if stories either leave us with a fucked-up revelation or set us afloat on a new stream based on the current continuity. And I thought this is the latter in a good way. But I agree with you. The nostalgia I was feeling for this old-school Ultimate Universe, which was a strange, fucked-up place, and the way they made Peter Parker suffer the consequences of that, yeah. I thought was well done.
Yeah, I mean, it was an interesting idea where it was kind of like Peter Parker was the audience and it was getting explained what was going on. But the reaction to Hulk in this issue was awesome and really kind of a great idea, well executed. Art's fantastic. It just was a little bit like we're 9 pages in and they were still setting up the premise where I was like, all right, like, I really hope this pays off. But I think it did, but I was just surprised that it's a one shot because it did such a job of like setting everything up before we really got rolling that I was just like, oh man, I can't believe this is just, it's already over. Because I was like, all that.
I will say, I mean, I hear what you're saying because there's a lot of exposition there. We get Nick Fury, Ultimate Nick Fury laying out what's going on in the Ultimate Universe to Peter Parker. But on the other hand, being reminded of all of those crazy things that happened, like I think I'll speak for myself, but I think this also speaks for a lot of other comic book fans. We remember early period original Ultimate Universe where everything was like very clean and really good, well done. And then he starts laying things out and like, oh yeah, Galactus, but your Galactus came here and destroyed Jersey City. And I was like, oh, right. And then he's like, oh yeah, and Magneto caused a giant tidal wave to destroy New York. Don't worry about it. And I was like, right. Oh my God, this is crazy. This all of this stuff went entirely off the rails at the end there.
Plus, they're like, oh, Nick Fury, yeah, he's a fucking liar. Don't believe a word he said. I was like, damn, they just lay that out. It was good.
Great stuff. Killer Influences, number one from IDW, written by Joey Esposito, art by Valeria Berzo. I talked to Joey a couple of weeks, maybe a couple of months back, about this book, which is about a true crime podcaster and a serial killer, and kind of a spoiler here, but this is the premise, end up teaming up together to see if they can help both of each other's careers. That's kind of the basic concept here. It's really messed up, really well done. I thought really well informed about true crime podcasts and just the general world in general. We've seen some other things like this a little bit. There was that Kyle Starks book from Dark Horse a couple of months back that I'm blanking on the name of that hit on similar territory, but was very different than this. And I thought this worked really nicely.
Yeah, I feel like this goes hard in the way that you want with something like this. If you're going to be in this format of like, oh, a story about true crime podcasters, you want to have it be pushing the border somewhere. And I thought it did with what the characters are willing to do and how they meet in the middle to be the monsters, to both be monsters on the same caliber. I thought was great. I thought the art was really good on this as well. Some great fucked up horror panels in the middle.
Yeah, I had a hard time with this just because I don't know who to root for. At first, I was rooting for the girl where she was like, oh, you know, she's getting pressured in by the serial killer to do something. But then she was like, I can make us both famous. And then she gets rich off of his murder spree. So now I'm like, oh, I guess I'm rooting for him to murder her. But what's going on? So, yeah.
You don't actually have to root for anybody. They can't hear you.
Well, that's not how I operate. And also,
there's no vote at the end on who is good and who is bad.
On this cover, it looks like they're going to play golf, and there was no golf, so that was also misleading.
Well, there was some golf club.
Oh, yeah, that's true. There was a lot of clubs.
Would you have liked it better if they just played a sick putt-putt?
Oh, dude, I love putt-putt, man. Come on, dude. The best.
I think that's a good tip. We've talked to Joey about some times. Joey, I don't know if you finished writing this series, but if you want to pivot it into being about putt-putt, I think you have a better hit on your hands for Pete. Yeah, specifically. Putt-Putt Pete, that's what we always call him. The Dead Man, number two from DC Comics, written by W. Maxwell Prince, art by Martine Barrazzo. We are continuing the new adventures of a Dead Man in the main continuity. He is dealing with some strange creatures that have emerged, as well as wrestling with a bunch of other supernatural mysteries. This issue, he is tangling with Batman as well as Plastic Man, and it's great. This is the team from Ice Cream Man. Yes. They're being as weird and as creative as you'd want them to be. There are multiple pages that identify the characters, that like break down their origins into six panels, if I recall correctly, and they're all awesome, and it keeps coming at random intervals, which is a fun little bit throughout this issue. I also just love the relationship between Batman and Deadman in general, and I think it plays out really nicely here.
Yeah, it's really awesome. I agree. This is a blast of an issue. This is so cool. I also love the moment where like Deadman tries to enter Batman, and you know, like he's had that happen before, so now he, you know, has kind of things in place to make it harder for him. With that, I think it's just a smart choice that isn't over explained. But yeah, this is just so cool. The art's unbelievable. This is such an amazing team and such a great use of characters, and so smart by DC to put this team on Deadman. I just, they're knocking this out of the park. Fun last panel. This is an absolute blast from start to finish. They killed this issue. This is fantastic.
Yeah, it's really good. I love the sort of deeper mythological, philosophical, religious bookends they're doing here on the front and back. And then the fun they're having with Plastic Man, and this is great. I love the elongated man up. Plastic Man correction, which I was like, long time coming for me. And the real breakdown, real Dead Man breakdown of Plastic Man. His foil or his partner of another ghost from the past, I think is just a really smart innovation to give him here rather than have so much of Boston brand comics are him being musing as he takes possession of different bodies. And I like that he actually has someone to speak to in this.
Iron Man number 7 from Marvel, written by Joshua Williamson, art by Yvonne Randall. We're kicking off the second arc here as Iron Man now has a school of kids who are all made in his mold that Rhodey is not necessarily approving of, and we see why in this issue. Meanwhile, I'm blanking on the name of the character, but the guy who is potentially the next Tony Stark is now the leader of AIM and coming directly for Tony Stark with some innovations of his own. I feel like this continues a great run on this title. How are you guys feeling?
Yeah, I agree. First off, this is a badass cover. Really cool. Last panel villain reveal. This is a really great package. Love the action. Love the art. And I'm on War Machine's side. Tony is really fucking shit up. He is doing too much. He needs to do less, and he's out of control. So, Team War Machine.
You're rooting for AIM? You want AIM to win?
No. I just think Tony is playing dangerously and playing loose, and, you know, he needs War Machine to kind of clean up all of his shit.
I really like this. I think it's just so smart that Tony thinks the protege Iron Man, I'll call him, who is on AIM's side, is dead and feeling guilty about it. And that's what's driving him to put together this group of kids to be his future army. While at the same time, that person that he's feeling so upset about is plotting against him is just great character positioning. With Madam Mask, who we get in the cold open in this issue, he's still caught up on and thinking about. Like, it's just really nice. Everybody is pointed in a different direction in a way that I think is really cool. And a lot of great splash pages in this. I was surprised how many there were, and I thought it was really beautiful, like, with War Machine and Iron Man sort of flying around, sunsets, beautiful.
Yeah, the last thing I'll throw out there is when we talked to Joshua Williamson a couple of weeks back, he mentioned there's a secret in the series that nobody has figured out yet, and I definitely am, like, trying to focus in and figure out what that is. I have no idea after this issue, but if any of our listeners or viewers have an idea, hit us up.
I feel like it has to be Madam Mask based.
Yeah,
I agree. Because that feels like the thing that's cooking on the side that we aren't really, that isn't part of the central core here. And it is, it's the story started with her with an unjustified motivation that she was like, what I'm going to do is threaten a bunch of geniuses until they become Tony Stark. And I was like, what, why are you doing, what, where did this come from? That's a crazy idea, lady. So yeah. I don't know. That's what I'm sniffing.
We shall see. We'll also see our next book, Beasts of Burrican, yeah. number one from Dark Horse Comics, written by Julio Anta, art by Daniel Irizelli. Sorry.
I hope we get to talk to the writers sometime. You know what I'm saying, Alex?
That would be great. any follow-up there, Pete?
No, I just hope we do because, you know, it would be nice to talk about such a cool project that they're working on. You know
I agree. I mean? It's too bad.
Yeah, it's too bad.
Yeah,
oh, well, and we'll maybe something in the future.
What are you doing?
Did you? wow, I think.
What are you doing, Pete?
I accidentally hit something on my screen.
Great. For anybody who's listening, Pete ruined our video stream. Okay, so we're talking about, we did talk to Julio on this week's live show.
Oh, you we did? Check
that
out.
Yes, please stop pressing stuff. Okay. We talked to him, so definitely go to listen to that interview. This is a part of the True Weird line, and it deals with the realities of Puerto Rico alongside a chupacabra is on the loose, is an added stressor going on there. Though maybe he is the hero that Puerto Rico needs. I guess we'll find out as we read the book. As we talked about on the show, I thought this was really thoughtfully written and beautifully drawn throughout. So I'm really looking forward to following this book. It's very similar to, oh my God, I'm blanking on the name again, but the Let the Devil Write One In, whatever the book was by James Tynion that was the more fictionalized thing out of the True Weird line. This is more in line with that versus a docudrama, but good stuff.
Yeah, it's such a great comic. It's powerful. It's beautiful. It's a really impressive piece of work. And I'm hoping for our good stuff, but I don't know, man. It could get bad first. But just such a great package as far as art and writing.
Really enjoyed this as well. Love talking to Julio about this. Great book. Love the villain. I think it's setting up to be something that I'm excited about. And I hope he does more.
Yeah.
Absolute Green Lantern number 16 from DC Comics, written by Al Ewing, art by Sid Kodian. We are continuing the massive fight that's happening in space with Green Lantern Joe, Tomer Ray, and a bunch of other folks. Sinestro arrives in this issue, and then we also get surprise reveal of another classic character at the end here in a way that I thought was terrifying. Yeah. I've been a little mixed about this book just because it is hard to hold on to the story sometimes, but this issue really worked for me mostly because of those big reveals and the moves that Joe makes, particularly here to sort of change the game in terms of taking on Mogo, who is the Black Lantern, who is bringing death. Pete, what'd you think about this one?
Yeah, this first off, a cool cover, but also fucked up cover. I don't like to see Joe like that. But this is really just kind of messed up, but great. The art's awesome. There's a lot going on in this issue.
Yeah. It is great stuff. Why don't we move on and talk about The Mortal Thor, number 12 from Marvel, written by Al Ewing, art by Jesus Saiz.
Yeah.
In this issue, we get Sigurd Jarlsson facing down the Serpent, who is actually Donald Blake, taken over by Jormungandr, the World Serpent. Yeah. So there's a lot of stuff going on here they have to lay out and get you caught up in, which is pretty wild. They do. And Pete, you're cheering. So what'd you think?
Yeah, I was surprised that I'm still enjoying this. You know, 12 issues in, we're still battling with this, like, is he Thor? Is he kind of Thor? We get it kind of explained as we go on. But I'm still having a blast with how it's being done. And first off, like the art and the character work on this, like that kind of like panel where it's like the snake is part of the bodies. Like it was just really cool. The character design, the art is just really impressive. The kind of snake but guy reveal was just truly such an epic panel that I was so moved by. But yeah, I left this just kind of like they're talking about the snap of the hammer coming back in your hand and how that's something you can't really forget. So that I think that's such a great explanation of why he has like a hammer on his string, which seems silly, but it kind of makes sense more in this issue. Yeah, I've been super impressed with this. If you would have like sat down and said, hey, we're going to have this story about Thor, but it's not Thor and he is kind of Thor, but he isn't, I would have been like, I wouldn't like this. But it was really very impressive and cool.
Yeah, great stuff. Next up, The Shaolin Cowboy Staying AI Live, number one from Dark Horse Comics by Jeff Darrow. This is another wild adventure of The Shaolin Cowboy. If you ever read this book, it's exactly what it sounds like from the title. It is a guy who wanders the desert in a post-apocalyptic wasteland. He practices Shaolin. He kills people. He fights them, but he's very peaceful about it. And this particular one, he is dealing with a lot of kind of more modern stuff, as you could probably intuit from the title, but through the lens of this post-apocalyptic landscape. Justin, what did you think about this one?
Great call coming to me. I mean the Jeff Darrow art, you just can't beat it. It's just, there's a point in this issue where he slices the a plastic bottle in half to get the message out, which I was like, sort of unnecessary, but pretty sick that you did it that way.
Well, it's necessary for the animals who, there are talking animals who are like, whoa, we've really tried to get that bottle open for
years. Yeah.
Wow, how'd you do that? Yeah. It's just every single part of this book is always so weird in that very specific Jeff Darrow way where you're like, you just got to roll with it.
I love this. I love this so much. The art style is fantastic. Love the talking pets. This is just badass. It's silly. It's all of these things. I love the kind of walk in the earth, righting wrongs motif. This is just such a cool, unique comic. I'm having such a blast. The kind of main character barely talks. This is just such a well-executed,
your favorite part.
Comic.
I love a silent person.
It highlights
person.
The art. The art is their real kind of main character.
What didn't you like? You think it's the bubbles that bother you, or is it the like narration?
It gets in the way of the art, man. Showcase the art.
Interesting. You might want to check out something called Art.
Hey, that's a great idea.
Interesting.
Can we do an art
just
podcast?
Just a suggestion. Poison Ivy, number 46 from DC Comics, written by G. Willow Wilson, art by Leandro Fernandez. Now, Poison Ivy is mayor, but we don't really get to see her this issue, as instead we focus on Janet from HR, who is now part of her administration, as well as her other aide, who is magical in nature as they run through the city. We get some big revelations of this issue anyway, as we're slowly leading up to the Bad Seeds crossover that's coming down the lane. Pete, what's going on?
Question.
Now, I thought of you, Alex, when I was reading this. I have a question for you.
Thank you.
Hate it when a title has a character in the title of the comic, but then isn't in the comic. So Poison Ivy's the title of this issue, but she's not really in here. Did that drive you nuts? Because I know in the past,
interesting,
it
that's
you.
Nothing that has ever bothered me and doesn't currently bother me.
I was going to say, I've never known that.
I gotta say, this time it continued not to bother me.
I completely disagree. I've heard you talk about it numerous times. How and something's titled something and they're not in it, and it drives you nuts. So
no, that's not what I've said at all. And thank you so much.
I've been listening to you for years, and you have said that. So I'm sorry.
I believe that you have not been. Yeah, what I'm talking about.
You've been on a podcast with him for years, listening.
Yes, listening. it's a step too far. Yeah. No, what Pete is actually getting at is when something is called like "I'm going to chop you into little bits," and nobody gets chopped into little bits in the comic book. I feel like that's a little bit of a. Misnomer, particularly if they pull out a knife at the end of the first issue, they're like, here we go. And I'm like, all right, let's chop it to little bits earlier.
Thank you.
It's like how he was so mad. Alex is so mad about the dog sitter because there was no dog that sat, and he was demanding.
They were all standing to attention and saluting the entire time.
No, there was that one panel where the dog did sit for her. Anyways, all that aside, I did think this was an interesting issue. Cops being horrible, which is always heartbreaking. There's a lot going on, but it really just felt like it was setting things up. Shit is about to go down, but this one is really kind of focused on the team that is handling things. So, this is kind of a building issue, if you will.
Yeah, I mean, there's so much expansion happening in this title. The commitment to the Gotham mayor storyline and the bureaucracy that it is laid out in this issue, I think, is really interesting. It's a bit of a swerve out of where we've been with this comic, and I'm curious where it's going. I'm fully on board with it. It just feels so different, yet I like the character so much. Janet is just a great lightning in a bottle character that I always want to see.
Yeah, and the last thing that I'll say about this is I just appreciate that they can maintain an entire comic here without Poison Ivy in it. You feel her presence throughout, but that's a tribute to the supporting cast and how strong they are that you can still do that. I think it's great. Fantastic Four, number 13 from Marvel, written by Ryan North, art by Andrea Sorrentino. I will just say I think this is my favorite issue of the week.
Yeah.
It is so ridiculous. So ridiculous.
Very ridiculous.
The
mad
plot here is that Johnny Storm comes up with an idea that they, and I almost hesitate to mention it because you should go read it. Yeah. Don't listen to what I'm about to
don't
say.
Don't listen to
go
this.
Read the book. Yeah. I'm going to say it anyway, but just like giving you spoiler space to turn off the podcast and then come back after this because it's just so much fun. Ghost Rider shows up to attack one of the Fantastic Four's old villains and is like, I'm going to penance stare you if you don't stop bothering the Fantastic Four.
Nick Scratch, the original
Nick Scratch, yes. And it turns out that it's actually Johnny came up with a plan to do a stealth mission where he and Sue mimic looking like Ghost Rider. He puts his head on fire, and then she makes his head invisible, so he's a skull. They dress up as Ghost Rider, and they're like, wow, that works so well. Let's do it to everybody. And it just spins. It's like such a ridiculous romp of an issue that just gets wilder and complimentarily stupider as it goes.
Yes.
Like, this is maybe the stupidest the Fantastic Four have ever been, and it is so funny.
Oh, that's interesting.
I mean, I agree with you completely. This feels like an idea that Ryan North just, like, wrote down, came back to, is, like, still noodling on, and just, like, couldn't help but make it a comic. The way that they heighten the penance stare in this is so funny, where he's like, I'll do the penance stare. And they're like, don't do it. No, it'll ruin my soul. And then he can't. By the end, he's like, it's nothing. It's not in the power set. But I think the twist that really got it for me is when Reed has to use his powers in this very weird way to save the day in the end, which I thought was very surprising.
That's great, too, just because the explanation there is like, well, we can't possibly be Ghost Rider. And then it is Reed Ray and Ghost Rider's business. He's like, well, what if I could be Ghost Rider? How would that work? And then they're all being Ghost Rider. And then the punchline being the real Ghost Rider showing up and being like, doing the pointing at eyes thing, being like, I'm watching you guys. Stop being Ghost Rider. Is
very
so
funny.
So
truly
funny.
One of the funniest, weirdest comics of the year, I think.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I'm glad you guys had fun, but I was on an emotional roller coaster. I got excited when I saw this cover because I was like, sick Ghost Rider. But then it says no Ghost Rider. And I was like, oh, that makes me sad. And then I read this comic and I'm like, these assholes are supposed to be so smart and supposed to be fighting crime and saving the world. And they're fucking around and they're not
they're fighting major crime.
No, they're doing bullshit. They're like, oh, don't bother us anymore, we're good guys, you're a bad person. I was like, you guys are playing with fire. If the Ghost Racer finds out you're pretending to be him, you're gonna be fucked. And then having the Ghost Rider as a punchline at the end, I was like, fuck you guys, you fucking abusing your power, it's fucking bullshit, fuck you.
You know what? You say that, but if you could walk around for a while and pretend to be Ghost Rider, you would. You would.
No way. Because that means Ghost Rider is real, and there's no way I would fuck with that dude.
That doesn't mean Ghost Rider is real.
You woke up one day and suddenly could turn into a flaming ghost head, but had no penance stare. I guarantee you'd be like, penance stare. You'd walk into a cheesesteak place and be like, hey, I'm going to penance stare you if you don't give me a one wit whiz.
Oh, man. I wasn't with you, and then you brought up cheesesteaks, and I was like, oh, well, maybe one.
Anyway, decide who you like better, me and Justin or Pete, and you'll either like this comic or not. Okay, Royals number 4 from Image Comics.
Come on!
Written by Derek Kirkib, art by Jacob Perez. This is following two psychic brothers who started off just running a card game and ended up in much bigger trouble than they expected. We got a big mythology breakdown here about how this world works and a lot of stuff beyond it, as well as more danger, particularly picking up on the insane cliffhanger of the last issue, which found both brothers shot and killed. And there's more to come, though, and we find out why here. This is a great creative series, beautiful art throughout. This is great.
I absolutely love this. Such a cool cover. Holy shit, a cow cliffhanger. You don't get that a lot. But yeah, this is an absolute blast. I'm loving the choices that they're made. This could be a horrible idea to try to go save the sisters, and it could be a trap. But I'm on board. This is just the art, all the twists and turns. This is such a great comic. I'm really loving this.
What a surprise I feel like this whole series has been. And the fact that we get the big mythology drop here in the 4th issue, I think is well done. It feels, and it's really hard to time that, I think, as an indie story, a story that there's no IP behind, you're just launching. I thought that this did a really great job of making us want it and then giving it to us in a nice chunk. And I like the way that everyone's been split up in a smart way where we don't quite know how it's going to come together.
Yeah.
It's, again, hard to do and very surprising. One of my favorite series going right now.
Supergirl Survive, number 2 from DC Comics, written by Ethan S. Parker and Griffin Sheridan, art by Rod Rice. This is an Elseworlds book that found Supergirl and baby Kal-El both jamming into his little baby rocket, not getting too far from Krypton before it exploded. And in this issue, we're jumping between two timelines much later in the timeline when they're trying to escape from the Lobo gang, as well as picking up to show a little bit of what happened immediately after the destruction of Krypton. I really like the first issue of this, but this one is even better. It's taking things to some absolutely wild Elseworld places. Really good series so far.
The incorporation of the Lobo gang felt a little movie tie-in-y to me, but I actually think it was better. I think it worked really well. And then when we get some, I won't say more than to say it's a little bit of the Green Lantern core shows up. Yeah. I thought that was awesome. Great reveal on the last page. This is another comic that is really surprising and punching above its weight when it comes to just great superhero storytelling.
Yeah, I agree. This is really fun. Love the Lobo stuff. Cool last panel reveal. Amazing art, tons of action. This is a really fun issue. Really enjoying this arc. Like the twists and turns.
Next up, Challenges of Doom, Mr. Fantastic number 1 from Marvel, written by Al Ewing, art by Mike Henderson. This is, maybe they did this before, but they're definitely doing this more frequently now. They have this series, they have a Punisher versus Spider-Man series that's going to be debuting next month. And both of these, the idea is to show moments throughout history of a character that is definitely movie tie-in, but expand on plot from the comics. So this is starting, of course, with the first meeting of Reed Richards and Doctor Doom and showing that at greater length. Same thing's going to happen again with Punisher and Spider-Man. Next month, so we'll be getting a series focusing on different moments through their history. But this is essentially a one-shot. There's not a bigger plot here. It's just, they're in college together. We see the moment when Doom wrecks his face, blames it on Richards, and we go a little and expand beyond that. So what did you think, given all that, about this issue?
We're in a Doom renaissance, and this is just another, like, there's just so much Doom stuff happening right now. And I will say, you know, we had the One World Under Doom stuff that I think was a bit of a miss because it was so big. But this era where we're getting a lot of, like, weirder, esoteric series focusing on Doom, I think is really where we want to be, and especially in relation to the movie. So I thought this is excellent. I really love the way they position Reed Richards and Dr. Doom as making the same mistake in their calculations over the course of this. We sort of ride with both of them as they're experimenting. And Reed takes the criticism and is like, oh, thank you. Oh, that's super helpful. Let's collaborate more. And Doom is like, I'll kill you. Yeah. I'll know what I'll do. I'll try this experiment on my face. And he pays the price. That's just a great... The Al Ewing boils down the characters to that moment. And I think that's a really smart crystallization of the two sides of the Doom Richards coin that we're always flipping.
Yeah, I agree. This is really cool. I really like this, you know, the back and forth between these two characters is so great. So it's kind of have a moment in time before all the madness happens where they're just kind of interacting as students is very interesting and cool. I also just want to take a moment. Marvel's doing this thing where it's kind of paying homage to people who have died in the book, and the Jerry Conway is very touching and very cool that Marvel is doing that. I just want to quickly mention that.
It is. It's in a lot of the books that we've reviewed. Yeah.
And last but not least, Radiant Black, number 43 from Image Comics, written by Kyle Higgins and Michael Busuttil, art by Giano Zaffiro. Last issue, we got a big cliffhanger that our original Radiant Black Nathan was somehow back in a new hero costume helping out his friend Marshall, who is the current Radiant Black. This issue, we flash back in time, picking up when he left Chicago to head to Los Angeles to follow through to the present day and loop back there. And I gotta say, though I generally liked a lot of the stuff that was going on in this issue, there's definitely... not to intuit too much, but there's definitely a lot of Kyle Higgins experiences in Hollywood, I think, 100%. Directly going into there. As Nathan gets hired to adapt Ordinary Gods, the series by Kyle Higgins, and I'm sure some of that stuff is like one-to-one with things that happen to Kyle Higgins. So that rung really true. Loved all of that stuff. The part that I was a little confused about is the way that they explain how he became this new hero is he did.
Yeah.
And, yes. And that's
how
it.
Things
and
happen was like, sometimes.
What? Wait, hold on. There's you left it on a cliffhanger of like, whoa, what is this costume? Where did this come from? How did he get into it? What's his powers? And he just kind of has it. And we yada, yada, yada through a lot of that part. Oh, and I was very surprised by that.
I bet we'll get that explanation in the next issue when the two guys come together, the two original Radiant Blacks come together. But I thought this was great. I really loved the divergence of it. I liked the reality of it. A lot of the things that were being said in these Hollywood meetings are things I've heard. The pivot to vertical and all that shit is very fun and real. And I think the analogy of him not being able to get his writing done because he is being a superhero feels like Kyle Higgins is like, I couldn't get my screenplay done because I was writing comics. Mm-hmm. And because Radiant Black was taking off so much in that time. So I thought that was a cool analogy to really lay into the overall continuity of his comic.
Yeah, I mean, this has been such an amazing juggernaut for 43 issues. It's really impressive artistically and all the different stuff that it's doing. And Justin is a line producer in Hollywood, so he knows what goes on in these meetings. So to kind
if
of
you're watching this video, you can tell I'm in Hollywood.
Yeah. And the other thing, I mean, Justin, maybe you could speak to this a little bit. You mentioned pivot to vertical. So the lines that you're producing, they used to be horizontal. They used to go that way, and now they got to go up and down instead of side to side, right?
I mean, that's a joke,
Hollywood,
but that's also true.
It on you.
That's also true.
Flips the narrative
of how
on
most
you,
things are made are like, well, we got to make sure we shoot for the horizontal and the vertical because we got to be able to cut it up into clips for TikTok and Reels, motherfucker.
Oh,
that's the biz, baby.
That's a good point. I should get out of here and start looking at some more TikTok Reels.
That is not what we were saying at
that's
all.
Not
but
what
I guess we're
saying
can...
calling them TikTok Reels is an old person thing.
Oh, boy. I got to watch my TikTok reels on the TV. Hey, yeah.
Zalbs, this was a great stack, man. There was a lot of great comics in this. Nice.
Oh, thank you so much. I'm glad you approved.
Victory lap. Time for the victory lap at the end.
Hey, I also think I did a great job. And if you think so, patreon.com/comicbookclub. We also do a live show every Tuesday night at 7 p.m.
Sure do.
YouTube coming out. We'd love to chat with you about comic books. Apple, Spotify, Android, or the app of your choice to subscribe, listen, and follow the show. Comicbookclublive.com. For this podcast and many more. Until next time, we'll see you at the Comic Book Club.
For the two comics I missed while my internet was bad, just follow me on TikTok Reels.